Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Well, in the United States, the Supreme Court yesterday ruled that Donald Trump, as a former president, is entitled to a degree of immunity. In the historic 6-3 ruling, the judges said that for the first time, former US presidents have absolute immunity from prosecution for their official acts and no immunity for unofficial or private acts. Well, the decision is likely to delay his trial for conspiring to overturn the 2020 US presidential election. For the very latest, I'm joined on the line by Marion McKeown, US correspondent with the Business Post. Good morning, Marion.
Good morning, Claire.
So it's worth just repeating this line from the Supreme Court decision. Former presidents are entitled to absolute immunity from official acts, but not from unofficial acts. And this could have very far-reaching consequences.
You know, I think the people, legal scholars certainly, and constitutional lawyers in the States are reeling from this. It seems that that is not, on the face of what you just called out there, doesn't sound that drastic. You know, that, you know, of course, the president's core functions are protected. The things he does under the Constitution should be protected from criminal, prosecution after he leaves office. But I think the devil, it's not even in the details so much as in that the way the court came to this decision. And, you know, they spoke about this so loftily a couple of weeks ago with Neil Gorsuch saying this is going to be a decision for the ages. We're going to take our time. They handed down a dog's dinner, really, of a decision. And the big problem with it is, and you know, several scholars have said, and including John Dean, who of course, you know, worked for Richard Nixon and went to prison because of it, and he said, look, if we had this in the Nixon days, he'd never have resigned. Mm-hmm. You know, no, that basically it has given such protections to Donald Trump. And one of the most bizarre aspects of this, it talks about official acts and then it talks about acts that are not official, and then this twilight zone in the middle. So one of the examples is, you may remember, and I'm sure the listeners out there remember, one of the reasons that Jack Smith prosecuted Donald Trump was that in the heat of this whole January 6th and the run-up, and he was determined that he was going to stay in power, he turned around to the Department of Justice, to his acting, Bill Barr had left the building, he went, I'm out of here, his very malleable Attorney General. But what Trump was doing after the election was even a bridge too far for Bill Barr. So Trump had a deputy, an acting Attorney General and a deputy acting Attorney General, and he said to them, look, I want you to send out letters to all of the swing states, tell them that there's been fraud and they have to hold, you know, they have to stop counting. And these, the acting Attorney General at the time said, no, we're not doing that. That's not true. There is no fraud. And he said, right, in that case, I'm going to fire you and I'm going to put somebody else in, this guy, Jeff Clark, who, this stooge in the Department of Justice, an environmental guy, who had said, yeah, you know what, if you make me Attorney General, I'll send out this false letter to these swing states telling them that they can't proceed with a count. Now, under what the court said today is, they said to Jack Smith, who's bringing this trial, they said, you cannot introduce any of that because Donald Trump, as president at the time, was talking to the Department of Justice Attorney General, or acting Attorney General, and that is an official act. So in order to prove that he behaved with criminal intent, you cannot use an official act. So they're saying basically that you cannot use the evidence that there is to show his state of mind, because he said that that was revealed during a conversation with a member of the Department of Justice. So you see the mess that this, and the bind this puts, you know, any prosecutor into. And indeed, Clarence Thomas, who has built quite a reputation for himself for being a world-class freeloader, also added a PS and almost a hint to Aileen Cannon, who's looking at the classified documents case, to say, you know, maybe actually you could look at why Jack Smith shouldn't even be doing this. Should special counsels even be legal? So not only in that case could she now say, well, Donald Trump decided to remove all of the classified documents. This is the other case that's happening in Florida while he was president. So that was an official act while he was president. So therefore, he's immune from that. And, you know, so again, this sort of absolute mess that the court has unleashed is really, it's staggering and it's alarming. And I think I've said to you before, Claire, that to me, the Supreme Court is the biggest threat to American democracy at the moment, more so than Donald Trump.
I mean, it's worth, I think, looking again at the dissenting voices in the Supreme Court, because it was Sotomayor, Justice Sotomayor, wasn't it, who had that absolutely blistering attack on the majority's decision. And she is saying if a president orders the Navy SEALs Team 6 to assassinate a political rival, he's immune. If he organises a military coup to hold on to power, interesting in the context of what we're looking at, immune. Yeah. Takes a bribe in exchange for a pardon, immune, immune, immune. Now, in the analysis that you have heard since the decision was handed down, is she right?
Yeah, and you know what would actually be quite bizarre? This decision runs from today. So effectively, Joe Biden, were he so minded, could do any of those things. He could call up the Navy, you know, these SEAL guys who I'm sure are a little ticked off that they're being seen now as potential assassins for whatever president chooses. I'm sure they're not happy about that, but they could see, you know, theoretically, Biden as commander of chief could call up these SEAL chaps who are sitting around somewhere and say, look, would you ever take out Donald Trump? I think he's a threat to the country's security. And, you know, would he be criminally liable for that? It seems from what the court said today that he wouldn't. So again, this is, you know, and John Roberts, the Chief Justice, who I think most people agree has just been a dreadful Chief Justice, more or less took issue with Sotomayor for her opinion, said, oh, you know, implied she was exaggerating or being hysterical. But in fact, what she said is that basically what they've done is they've elevated the status of a president closer to the status of a king at this stage. And the dissenting judges are furious about this. They're concerned about it. They recognize the threat to democracy, as do objective constitutional lawyers, because this is above and beyond anything that the court had to do. And it's sort of, the court has been doing this sort of judicial power grab for itself of late. It made a decision about overturning a principle called the Chevron principle last week, which after the debate, of course, was almost got no coverage. But that was as significant as the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And some people would say even more so. So yeah, this court has really gone pretty rogue, okay. I think, by most objective standards.
And listen, Joe Biden was out and issued a very robust rebuttal of this decision in a very short and succinct speech. But of course, the focus really still is on him, isn't it? Since the debate last week, where so many questions were being raised about whether he is fit to run. His wife, Jill Biden's on the cover of Vogue magazine saying he should go ahead. And I read this morning that he is really listening to Hunter Biden now, his son, who is utterly convinced that he should stay in the race, Marion.
Well, I've no idea why he's listening to Hunter Biden, frankly, because if there's one thing now, and that, you know, that is not to disrespect, like, addiction is a terrible burden, but Hunter Biden has shown the most appalling judgment. Throughout, you know, he's what, a 50-year-old man or thereabouts. He has shown appalling judgment on any number of issues throughout his life. He is not somebody I would be taking any advice from. Now, the Biden family is very, very tight and very, very clannish, but there is no denying that last Thursday's performance by Joe Biden was just dismal. It was appalling. And people, any American watching that, would be right to be concerned and to think, my God, can this guy govern until November 2024, never mind November or January 2029, because he really did not seem to be capable of it. And the sort of, not just the lethargy, but the inability to take on Donald Trump, the inability to counter him and to check his lies and to, you know, to basically, and to set out what Biden's policies would be. He really failed on all levels. Mm. Now, one of the surprising things is that he's raised $33 million since then, and most of it in small donations. And what he did last night, I think, was quite clever in coming out against the Supreme Court and saying, you see, now that they've made this decision, it's even more important that Donald Trump doesn't get back into the White House, because God only knows what he would do and how he would exploit this decision if he did. So I think that's going to be a part of Biden's gambit from now on. I don't think he's going to get out. I really don't. And I think, and I've spoke to several people last week, and the gist I got from people, even people who thought that Biden had a terrible night, is that people who are saying, get out, get somebody else in, is that they have no, what people were saying was, look, they've no idea. These are people who've been dealing with campaigns forever, of how hard it is to turn this ship around. Now, if Biden became incapacitated between now and November, they'd have to. But presumably then it would be Kamala Harris who would step up if he were, you know. But they just seem to think that the funding, and there is, you know, there is a thing, I think, Claire, that is true. Gretchen Whitmer, to my mind, is one of the smartest and most promising of the emerging Democrats. She's been a terrific governor of a really difficult state. She has an all-female executive, and they're so smart and so good at their jobs. Michigan is a state that is really 50-50 hardcore MAGA and 50-50 Democrat, and yet she has managed to govern it and govern it well. But it's a huge transition. Not that she wouldn't be capable to go from just being a local state, you know, person to suddenly going onto the national arena. It's a bit like, I don't know, if the number two seed dropped out of Wimbledon and not quite you or I were asked to step in. And it's not,
yes,
quite,
I know,
that.
A journeyman tennis
it's
player.
It's a different stage.
But and in the time frame that exists as well, which is
in
a,
the
10 a,
weeks,
a huge
which is
challenge.
What she'd have.
But you know, you know, you said there that they've raised $33 million since the debate, most of it coming from small donations. But what really matters is whether the big donors stay with Joe Biden. And they don't really have a choice, as you say.
You know, if he decides to stay in, what are they going to do? Because, you know, you don't want to back a horse that has no chance of winning. But at the same time, if they don't back Biden, then he has less chance. So I think at the moment, people are really concerned about whether he has a chance at all of winning this. And, you know, another performance like the one on Thursday night would pretty well, I think, doom him. But, you know, if you're going to be on the campaign trail, you've got to be visible. He's done very, very little direct contact with journalists. He's done very few direct interviews. He's been very much cosseted and sheltered really from the media and the public. And, you know, Donald Trump isn't doing a whole lot of campaign events either. Like, he does a big rally once a week or once every 2 weeks, and it grabs a lot of headlines because he says things that are outrageous. But in fact, he's not doing a whole lot either. This is a, you know, I've covered five or six campaigns now, presidential campaigns, and this one is bizarre because there's so little to get a grip on. Like, they're both breadcrumbing the American public, essentially, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. And I think because they're such known quantities and such known and not necessarily loved quantities that they probably feel the less the public sees them, the better. But it's a strange way to run a campaign for both of them.
Now, Marion, just briefly, I also wanted to ask you about Steve Bannon, the former White House advisor to Donald Trump. And he says he's proud to go to prison. He's described himself as a political prisoner because he has surrendered to his sentence now and he's gone in, hasn't he?
He has. He had no choice. He tried to get to the Supreme Court by three or four different avenues. You know, he was found guilty. He served a prison, or he was sentenced to prison. Peter Navarro, Trump's trade advisor, is currently in prison for the same reason. Bannon will come out, I think, on the 31st of October. You know, Steve Bannon is a clown, but he's a dangerous clown. He's a rabble rouser. You know, he really does rile people up. And he sits up in his little fiefdom in a townhouse in Washington, with his podcast that he spews out hatred and bile every day. I think 4 months off the air isn't going to do anyone any harm. I don't think the country will be any the worse for it. But he sees himself as some kind of a martyr. He's desperately trying to get back into Trump's good graces. And I suspect he's desperately auditioning for a position back in the Trump, in what could be, he sees certainly as a future Trump White House as an advisor. Whether or not he gets that, you know, will remain to be seen. I think Trump was a little wary of his penchant for grabbing the headlines and the, you know, the spotlight when he was in the White House previously.
Marion, thank you very much. Claire. Marion McKeown there from the Business Post.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.